Alrighty, bang, we are live all over Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Welcome back to the Tripod Punting Show. My name's Clarkey from Rugby League Column, Clarkey's Rugby League Column. Don't even know where I'm from. Joined every week by my co-host, Jacob from Tripod Punting. Winnie, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, thanks, mate. I couldn't decide which intro music we should start with, but the rock vibe, we're rocking, mate. We've won three best bets in a row, which brought us to 4-2 for the round. Six best bets was a lot, but I said I'd be happy with 4-2. We'll dissect a lot of them. But to cash the mixed matchup as easily as you like today, with the first game being a lot higher scoring than the second, and we picked the winner in both, 28-12, Para outscored the Storm in the mixed matchup. So we didn't win in round one or two, so it feels good to hit that one. And best of all, I was cooking, and Winnie's Kitchen got up at $11 as well in the Para game, which we can celebrate. Hopefully a few people watching us tonight were on that too.
Yeah, of course, the Winnie's Kitchen, not official part of this show, but definitely makes the weekend sweeter for the Tripod members in our Facebook group. Of course, this is a live show, guys, so I can see a bunch of comments rolling through on the Instagram. G'day to everyone here on Instagram, and of course, we can see people on Facebook. G'day, Dan, and g'day, Sora, there over on YouTube. So we went 4-2 on the best bets, was it, Winnie? Do you want to go into those now, or do you want to go through game by game, and we'll touch on them there?
No, we can touch on those six games that it applied to.
Awesome. Well, let's start the night. Let's rewind back to Thursday night. It was Panthers v Broncos. We're at Bluebet Stadium, and the Panthers won 12. In this one, the line was set at -11.5 against the Panthers, which they easily cover. Now, we can talk about this one from a footy perspective, but I don't think there's too much to break down. It was all the Panthers. From a betting perspective, Adam Reynolds is out. That hurts. But you still give the Broncos a chance. There's a lot at stake in this game as far as their pride is concerned, having lost what was an unlosable grand final last year. Then we get the news, Payne Haas is ruled out late. And this is what really frustrated me as a punter and as a footy fan, not as much, but to a slight extent, where teams can name these players knowing they're not going to play. So the results that ruled out Payne Haas were known one day after the game. The Broncos medical staff would have known at that point he's no chance of playing. You know what I mean? When it wasn't like his knee suddenly got worse overnight. They name him anyway. A lot of punters do get on thinking Payne Haas will be there. He's not. So that absolutely sucked from a punting perspective. Then we lose Reece Walsh in the first 3 minutes. It was a nightmare for anyone who took the Broncos in this one. A really, really unfortunate way, because I truly believe, Winnie, to beat this Penrith side this year, and over the past 3 years, you need to be at your best or at least close to it. And with the injuries the Broncos sustained prior to the game, unfortunately, weren't able to. And that's honestly my main takeaway from this one. I don't bring into this contest too much. I'm very keen the next time these two sides meet at full strength. But alas, it was a great win for the Panthers. Did you see it that way as well?
Yeah, similar takeaways. It's already disappointing that you don't get them both at full strength. That was with no Reynolds, no Fisher-Harris. But I don't want to just repeat everything you said, but it does really annoy me. Payne Haas needs knee surgery. Like, they had to know this when they named the team on Tuesday. So I know players are going to be in and out. I've already whinged. Round one, there's no foreign. Okay, although we saw he wouldn't have been the difference when we saw the Titans play. We're going to get to that. Don't worry. I already saw a Titans comment there. How do I avoid homelessness? I put my mortgage on the Titans top four tip. I appreciate that I'm very convincing. I've given out plenty of tips in the preseason and so far this year. We're 9 from 13. I don't believe anyone put their whole bankroll on one particular $10 shot. Cash that one out if you can, Sora. Plenty of other winners we've had that hopefully you might have had other mortgages on. But Wade Egan is out the next week, and I understand because he was under an injury cloud. I'm not expecting them all to go my way. I don't think I've had a single rep player ruled out of any of the teams we've bet against yet this season, but the season's still young. But Payne Haas is the best prop in the game. And to lose him out of the blue when they knew, it did really annoy me, because now I'm not making the same bet. I wouldn't have played that. Like, that definitely tips the scales. And look, losing Reece Walsh a couple minutes in, like, that is just really bad luck as well. So then what ended up playing out is not what I wanted to bet on. So yeah, I took Broncos 10 plus 10 and a half, and I felt like a few minutes in, I got no chance here, and it was Penrith hurt, put them in the hurt lockup, and slowly ground them down. It's just not the same game. I mean, they've got four star players, if I include Carrigan. They're the four most important players. They didn't have three of them. Nevertheless, the takeaway for Penrith, we know they're hard to beat at home, but I think I said this last week. I don't believe they can win a fourth comp in a row with the same style, which is to punish everybody and to be more physical and more powerful than everyone else, because I think that would just take too much of a toll. And I reckon they've recognized that, and they're actually going to play more enterprising, attacking, free-flowing footy and back themselves to actually be the best attack in the comp, or a top three, top two attack in the comp, so that they don't have to absolutely get into a grind with everybody, hold every team to single digits to win. Because if they can win their share of games by scoring five or six tries, because they're just, they play with no fear, they'll run it on last, they'll throw it around as well as anybody, then when it comes down to the business end of the year, they can actually then tighten the screws, and obviously then they can do what they do best in finals games. But I think it's a trend to follow that overs could be good plays in Penrith games, because I've noticed that they're enjoying that style of footy this year.
And when they do attack out of their own end, they're possibly one of the best teams out. You know, the Roosters are very good as well, but Penrith are just so deadly at that. Comment here rolled in on Instagram from JDN McCleary, and he says, why does a club have any obligation to worry about a punter? Laugh my ass off. Well, for me, Winnie, and you can have your say after this if you like, but it's just about integrity. You know, other professional leagues around the world, you don't name players when they require knee surgery. It's reported on, it's logged with the league that manages that competition. And by the same stance, you don't just rest players suddenly an hour before kickoff. At the end of the day, the NRL takes a percentage of almost every single bet that is wagered through these betting sites. And so for me, it's just about integrity and fairness to the punter, and just an overall more professional product of the game. Would you agree with that?
And I would add to that, like, yeah, what? Because you don't want your opponent to know exactly what you're planning. So by that token, teams, if they're just doing what's best for them, keep it completely secret. Don't tell us who's injured. Don't have an injury report. Yeah. Don't tell us the Tino. I'm sorry to bring it up. Don't tell us Tino's out for the season. So every single week, or maybe he's back this week, we don't know who to prepare for. Like, how far do you want to take it? Like, you've got people buying tickets to a game. You know, maybe I'm flying to Brisbane to watch it, or flying to Penrith if I get to see Payne Haas. Maybe I don't buy the ticket if I'm not. Like, and of course the punting and the super coach. And I understand there's players that, where there's question marks too. Like, and it'll go both ways. We will have ones that go our way. So it's not fair for me to just whinge only when it goes against me. I am whinging because it's only gone against us so far. We haven't had any in our favour. So I'm just saying, like, please, can that even out? But in this particular circumstance where I'm sure they knew, it's a bit annoying, that's all, because it comes back to, like, would I have made that bet? No. If a game really surprises me and how it plays out, I get it wrong, you know, I accept that, I cop that on the chin. But I wasn't surprised at all by what I saw once I knew which players were involved. So it hurts. But you got to give a lot of credit to Penrith for being too strong on the night as well. I hope that – do they meet later this year? I hope they can meet both closer to the peak of their powers. And if, you know, if I can, I don't want this to be a super long show, but the one other thing is you do have to start to worry a little bit about Brisbane. You know, at 1-2, you don't know how many weeks it will be until Haas returns to the field. You don't know for sure when Reynolds is back. Like, everyone had him top four. I didn't put him in the top four, you know. Like, I'd be surprised if they make it top four from here. I'll go that far.
Yeah, look, I think that Payne Haas is arguably the most important player to that Broncos side. And that's certainly up for debate because there's a lot of influential players. But as you touch on, their injury list is growing, and it's going to be interesting to see how they respond to that.
And even Walsh, I mean, you know, and he might be back next week, but it's not ideal, far from ideal.
Oh, I don't think he'll be back next week, mate, unless we see him wear one of those NBA face mask things. That would be pretty funny if he did, though, just because he actually has broken that cheekbone before. So it'd be a little bit more of a cautious return, I would think. Let's move on to Friday night, the 6 p.m. game. It was the Warriors v. Raiders over there in Christchurch. And the Warriors got up 18-10. The line was set at -7.5 in this one against the Warriors. So they just managed to cover. For me, in this one, the Warriors got dragged into the Raiders' style. They played slow, gritty. And ultimately, when I was watching this live, I didn't think they were going to cover the line. You know, the likes of Roger Tuivasa-Sheck and Sean Johnson weren't able to be their free selves. They had some moments, but the Warriors we saw last year were a lot more free-flowing in their attack. So I do think they fell into the Raiders' trap to an extent there. A few calls went the Warriors' way that could have gone the Raiders' way, but I am satisfied the better side won here. The most telling stat for me, though, Winnie, is the zero offloads from the Warriors. And that's what I say about getting dragged into the Raiders' style. When you play the Raiders, you need to play expansive, you need to create opportunities, and you need to drain their energy. The last thing you want to do is get into a battle where you're completing sets at a high percentage and you're kicking to corners and getting into the grind. The Raiders love that, and they will beat you at it. And the Warriors almost learned that lesson, but ultimately they get the win here. And as I touched on last year, Winnie, what I'm looking for throughout the year, particularly as we get closer to finals, not so much now, but it's how can sides win games? You know, because if a side's just coming out and winning every week 40-0, and it gets to the finals and they find themselves 20-0 down, how do they respond to that? For the Warriors, this is another way to win. It's another feather in their cap, which will be good for them in September, where I expect they will feature. What did you make of this game?
Yeah, Ryan comments there, the line opened 6.5, closed 9.5. Again, oh. Egan was ruled out. And, you know, again, that went against us. But to a lesser degree, I'll be honest, on Tuesday, I knew I was going to be on the Warriors. They were probably just about my favorite play of the whole round. I was just so pretty much certain they were going to win and pretty confident they were going to cover. So I did have -7.5 written as a best bet. But when I really thought about it, I thought what they'll really do that I'm most confident in is put the clamps on the Raiders. The Raiders won't be able to enjoy much success at all. I don't think that the Raiders have a high ceiling in attack. And the Warriors at 0-2, not Mount Smart, but still New Zealand fans, they treat it like a finals game because you can't fall 0-3 and kind of waste all the momentum you built last year. So it's going to be all in by the Warriors, and the Raiders won't be able to go with them. So I changed my best bet to under 18 flat for the Raiders. In the end, you won probably more easily. I don't think the Raiders had any points at halftime, but and didn't get above 10. But you would have actually covered the 7.5, of course, but you had to sweat that. If you did play the line, and as Ryan says, if you played the closing line, you actually lost. You didn't cover the game. The Raiders finished the game with the ball on the Warriors' try line. Like, they had multiple opportunities. Like, the Warriors, who had lost the week before, leading by 8 with 2 minutes to go, you'd think they'd play it safe. No, like, they get the ball stripped off them in a one-on-one tackle with, 2.5 minutes to go just to give the Raiders a sniff, ultimately keep them out. But what did surprise me about this game is I felt the Warriors got the ascendancy, got on top. It was 8-0. They muffed a couple of chances where they made line breaks, couldn't find the support runner. And I've said this before, but usually talking about good teams, you don't put them away. You're going to give that, you leave the back door ajar. You're going to give them an opportunity. I was really surprised that it was the Raiders coming back and taking the lead. Like, I think the Raiders led this game 10-8 with 20 to go. You know, like, they could have actually pinched it. Like, that was the biggest shock to me. And the beauty of the best bet is the Raiders were in a position where they could have won, but the best bet may still have won, you know. So it was a pretty good position to be in terms of an arm wrestle. But I must say I was surprised and I was impressed by how much the Raiders hung in there and took it to the Warriors. And I think you mentioned the style of Canberra, like Fogarty, a lot of pinpoint kicks that allowed them to arrest back field position. And in the end, the Warriors scored out on the left edge, and then straight after that, the Raiders dropped it. Might have been Kotrick dropped it on the right wing. Right, drops a bomb, and RTS first try back in the Warriors jersey. Pretty nice try, and that was straight on the back of that, and essentially bang bang, got the Warriors in front again. Some nervous moments, especially what they lived through the week before. But they got it done, and they'll feel all right now at 1-2, and knowing that they've been pretty good across all three games.
Their fans would have been extremely nervous when they gave up that 1-on-1 strip with 2 or so minutes to go. The last final point from this game is Charles Nicholl-Klukstar still not ready to return from his hamstring injury. Tank Tuipiki ruled out with a concussion, so we will likely see RTS back in his natural position next week, which is exciting for all footy fans for the Warriors. The next game on Friday night was the Roosters v Rabbitohs there at Allianz, and the Sydney Roosters walked away winners 48-6. Now, the line was only set at -3.5 against them, so they absolutely blew that line out of the water. What can I say? Who saw this coming? I would have felt comfortable on the preview show making a case for either side here to win in a close one. I believe I leaned with the Roosters, but I didn't have too much great confidence. For the Rabbitohs, you cannot have your back against the wall with that much outside noise and pressure and perform like that. There's a lot of concerning rumors around the club right now. If Demetrio truly believes his narrative from round one press conference that they're going to build into this season, I think he's highly mistaken. They need to win quick because they are actually regressing. They're not building. Whatever they're building is falling down very, very quickly, and it's only round 3. Meanwhile, for the Roosters, What a way to bounce back from their loss to Manly, especially without their chief playmaker in Luke Keary. It was a more measured, patient, and calculated attack. And as we boasted on the preview show, Winnie, this is a side that, yeah, as the season goes on and they build those backline chemistry and cohesion, throw the ball around early. But against Manly, they just took way too many risks and just silly opportunities that weren't there. Here against the Rabbitohs, they were more precise with their moments. And then when they're precise, they have so much X factor, it's not funny, between Suoli'i, Manu, Teddy. And that's before even mentioning their world-class wingers in Young and Tupou, right? Angus Crichton, a World Cup winner, was coming off the bench, for goodness sake. They have enough X factor where if they play precise like they did against the Bunnies, they'll put a lot of sides to the sword this year. Big letdown by the Bunnies, though. That's my final takeaway from this one. What were your key takeaways?
Yeah, let's go with the Roosters. I mean, you mentioned Crichton's off the bench. Siwa Wong has to play reserve grade. You know, that's how stacked they are. Now, one minor thing, I can't complain too much because Winnie's Kitchen got up, but on Sunday, my Winnie's Kitchen was Walker to score in the first 60 and the Roosters to win. So, of course, the Roosters lost and did nothing. What are they doing this game? Walker scores twice in the first half. And did the Roosters win? Let me just check the numbers. Yes, by 42 points. So it's like my first thing was like, yeah, you couldn't have played anything like this on Sunday, could you? But the truth is the Roosters are a dead set quality team. Like I wouldn't walk back at all picking them to win the premiership this year. You know, I think obviously Penrith's been impressive, but Penrith went down in round one. But the Roosters for me still look like when they're on, they're very hard to handle. So you do have to factor that in to the Bunnies. Like Manly are improved this year, and Manly just got them, had better prep in Vegas. And then Brisbane is a very tough task, as are the Roosters at Allianz in Warrior Hargreaves 300th. But it's the magnitude. Let's talk about the Bunnies. Now, remember, I was at that game at Suncorp, and I said, and this wasn't unique to me, but I said the Rabbitohs should have lost by 40. Like, that's how bad they played. Brisbane just couldn't quite make them pay for all those mistakes. So I thought that meant that the Rabbitohs had so much room for improvement. But I'm sick of saying that because I keep watching the Rabbitohs underperform and underperform. And what's the stat now? They've won 4 of their last 16 premiership games. And that's since they were top of the ladder in round 11 last year when they'd beaten everybody. So I know what they're capable of because I saw it. Like, you can't fluke being really good. Like, they were a really good footy team. Yeah, there's a couple of guys out. Arrow's out, Campbell Graham's out, but like I fell for it. Oh, Whiten back this week, plus backs against the wall, plus the rivalry, plus they were playing Thursday to Friday, long turnaround. Roosters were on the short, Sunday to Friday. Like this game totally shocked me. So I didn't have a best bet on it, but I did lose my same gamer. I'd need the team to 30 and both sides to lead at some stage. You know, that got blown away. And honestly, with some same gamers, I'd rather lose all the legs rather than just lose one of them. It's going to pay the same, but that's fine if I get it wrong and it's not too costly. But what is wrong with the Rabbitohs? Like, and I don't want to say I saw it coming, but I did think to myself, like, there is a possibility of implosion. Like, I couldn't see the Roosters getting blown away on Friday, but I kind of was kicking myself, like, maybe I should have gone for that extreme in my same gamer of like, what if the Rabbitohs are just rotten to the core? Because you heard all the noise, Demetrio and Latrell, and you see, you know, and they dropped Ilias, and you know the sum is not adding to the phrase, like, the sum of the parts is seems to be adding up to a lot less than what it should, right? With the talent that's in this team, so you do wonder if they've just got a massive culture issue. Do you recall the opponent next week? Oh, it's Bulldogs on Good Friday, right? So, I mean, well, the Bulldogs looked better yesterday than what we've seen the Bunnies look all season long. But certainly when the results don't make sense to me, then I think there's something I can't see that is affecting them. And so I could only look within. I think JD had to say that he's the man to see the ship. He couldn't say anything else. But I think his days are just about numbered.
And James Graham from Facebook says, Walker not firing, Latrell patchy. Certainly that doesn't help when half your spine isn't performing to their best. The halfback's been dropped and the hooker's coming off the bench. There's a lot of change there. But ultimately, a final takeaway from this game is it's the same story for the Rabbitohs. Once they face that resistance and the downhill slope starts, they're not responding. They're not responding to the adversity. But when the Rabbitohs are the ones running downhill And, you know, if they were to verse the Titans next week, they'd probably smash us 50-0 because they are that sort of team. Once the momentum builds, they take over. Very fitting we talk about my team now as you've just changed the thumbnail. I bloody damn well wish to God that there was not a game on Saturday at 3 p.m., but there was. And for the sake of this show, I must be fair and review it. Saturday arvo was Bulldogs v. Titans, and the Bulldogs won 32-0. Now, this was a pick'em game, which is really hard to believe with the hindsight of the result. Winnie, in your punting commandments, can I ask you a question? Was there a rule that said bet with your head and not your heart?
That's a good one. We talk about always looking for something that's positive expected value. So that's where you're trying to be analytical and objective. Have you fallen victim to betting otherwise?
Mate, I'll leave it to our viewers to guess how much money I've lost on the Titans in these first two rounds. It's more than any sane man should have, because my belief in this club far outweighs the reality of where we're at. And what can you say as a Titans fan? The one solace you take from this game, and the only positive, is that it can't get worse. But it did. Our captain ruptured his ACL, the only one who's been having a go. So it did get worse somehow, some way. And then our feeder club, the Tweed Seagulls, with plenty of Titans playing, including the halfback that's going to take over Tanner Boyd and Jaden Campbell, get pumped by the Burley Bears, who ditched us last year to join the Broncos as our feeder club. So it got worse again somehow. Unbelievable. I'm at a loss for words in the preseason. I genuinely believed, and I know everyone says you're biased with the Titans. Maybe it's subconscious, but genuinely in my heart and in my head, I believe the Titans would be on 6 competition points at this stage. I thought we would have defeated the Bulldogs and Dragons with a bye in between, and I thought we'd be ready to get revenge on the Dolphins next week at home, who beat us both times last year. I genuinely thought there was a world where we could be up around that top 4 right now and undefeated. Instead, I could not have got that possibly more wrong, and it is so disheartening. All I can say is well done to the Bulldogs in this one. They were absolutely clinical. The Titans blew an opportunity early on through the AJ Brimson bomb try. Only the Titans could bomb that try. No other team could do that. And from there, the Bulldogs did not give them another opportunity over the entire 80. And that's commendable stuff, brilliant stuff. And Doggies fans enjoy that. And they deserve it, Winnie. They've been turning up for years for a side that hasn't been performing the best. And they've been due a big result like that. So really happy for Bulldogs fans. And obviously, as a Titans fan, I don't have too much else to say. And you had us as a best bet as well. So I feel like I just feel let down by everything to do with this game, mate. How did you see it?
And I've got to explain it as well. And I think the biggest mistake I made with the best bet, which was Titans plus half a try, so not to be outscored in terms of tries. So can you just check again, Clarky? It wasn't 32-0 with 16 penalty goals? Because no. If it was, we actually got the – no, there were a few tries now, unfortunately. So where I actually think I got this most wrong is the fact that the Titans were 0-1, but the Dogs were 0-2. So the Dogs were probably even more desperate and at home. So I actually regret going against the Dogs, because nobody thinks the Dogs are much chop at all, and they hadn't been really very good the first couple of rounds. But remember, I did say against Cronulla, they were – in that game up to their eyeballs for 60 minutes. We saw maybe Cronulla's not as good as people thought a little later on Saturday. So I know that the Bulldogs are probably underrated. It's just I thought the Titans were as well. And people will say, you didn't get the part about going against the Dogs wrong. You got the part of backing the Titans wrong. I get that, but I was actually comfortable with the reasons that I thought the Titans should improve. As you just said, it can't get any worse. Didn't we say that after round one? We said it can't get any worse than losing opening round at home 28-4 to the Dragons. Right, that's the part that I got totally wrong, because they were even worse yesterday. So, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have gone against the Dogs, but it's like we also said, oh, losing Foran hurts so much in round one. Well, Foran played in this one. What's the excuse now? They scored less points. They're even worse, you know. So we probably established that that wasn't valid, and it's more than Kieran Foran that's going to save this side. And what are we going to say next? Oh, they still don't have Jaden Campbell and Fifita, right? But everybody's down a couple of troops here or there. The Titans were off the bye, but I don't know, were they all just on holidays? I mean, there's actually mandatory time the players have to get off. I will tell you a positive, Clarky. It's kind of a waste to have the bye in round two, and you didn't use it to your advantage because you didn't use it to prepare to play better the next week. But the good news is, had you played in round two, I can say pretty confidently you would have definitely lost to whoever you played. If I draw any type of form line from round 1 to 3, at least be thankful that, you know, maybe there's improvement later in the year. You don't want the buys later in the year if you're actually playing like an NRL side, which you're not at the moment. Now, the top four pick, I know that some people have made a lot of that, and I'll wear it, you know, and I was kind of like you. I was like, home to Dragons round one. Like, not that you're going to pick a team's ladder position based on the first month, but it does make a big difference if you can get a start. And like, yeah, that bye, and then you played Dogs, you played Dolphins. Like, it was set up to have a really good start. You lose two, you know, games that on paper were very winnable. And already, and the way that you lost, right, you lose each by 30 points. And I'm like, you know, hey, that's fine. I got that wrong, you know. And for me, if they would have, the Titans, if would have made the eight this year, I just felt like it could be a really tight competition at the end of the season. It may still turn out that way. And I felt like if you're in a sniff for the eight, you might only be a win or two away from the four. You know, kind of explained why I thought that was a good price a few weeks ago. And if it's not to be, it's not to be, you know. I'd be more salty if the Titans had lost twice by a field goal, just knowing like those could come back to hurt you. But they had no right to be anywhere near these opponents. They didn't get there. And now you lose Tino for the season, right? So now it's like it kind of is season over, you know, because yeah, that was meant to be the key strength of this team, was that rep pack. And the fact that like Tino and Mo are both on the right side of 25, only going to get better. And that rips the heart out of your team. He's been your best on ground, like season in, season out, and he's your leader. And it's like, oh, I can remove myself from that and say, hey, I got that tip wrong. But I'm not a Titans fan. A Titans fan can't remove themselves from that. Like, the Titans have literally given him a 10-year, $10 million deal. I mean, I hate to say this, but it's like the winner is Tino's agent. Like, to secure that deal right before you do an ACL, like, I mean, I was really hurting for the Dolphins losing Gilbert. I was gutted when I heard that up preseason, and this is the same thing. In fact, Tino's even more important to the Titans. So it is like you've had your heart like ripped out of your chest. I don't know what, like, you know, it kind of almost some ways takes the pressure off, maybe. Maybe takes the pressure off Dez and the rest of them, because now there's no expectations. Like, now people will just say they're going to win the spoon. That's the only thing they can win. So it's really tough, because everyone comes into this year thinking why their team can be better. And there were a lot of reasons. I know not many people saw them, and now people will say they didn't exist. And maybe I was seeing ghosts, a bit like Tanner Boyd, who after his first kick was charged down for a try, which, you know, is unlucky. Then he didn't want the ball the rest of the game. He literally, we're pretty good. We don't swear on our pods. Definitely not as much as like a Latrell on a post-game interview. So, but Boyd was peed his pants all over the field, right? Like was terrified to kick the ball on fifth tackle. So it cost him multiple tries, you know, and you mentioned it. If people didn't see it, the Titans put a bomb up like 5 minutes into the game. AJ Brimson, perfect timing, jumps, skies above Taff, catches it. He is running towards the try line. Like, yeah, he's stumbling a little bit. The try line is 2 meters in front of him, and he thinks that he should offload to Kieran Foran, who's dead set, doesn't catches it because his arms are in the air celebrating the try. So when that happened at the beginning, I was like, you know, it's not a good sign. Like, it might not be our afternoon. But there's no point pinpointing one moment saying that's bloody unlucky, or kick out, charging down a kick and scoring is unlucky, because they lost 32-0. It doesn't even come down to one moment. It's so much worse than that. But I will say the Dogs showed a bit more of what they're capable of. And yes, it was only against the Titans. And we saw like the Dragons did similar to you and then have been brought down to earth in the coming weeks. But still, a soft kill can do you some good. So Doggies fans will be up and about a little bit, and Titans fans, well, you're here, mate, and I think people respect that you're fronting up, but of course you're hurting, understandably so.
Yeah, probably the worst 80 minutes of football I've ever watched. Look, I'd love to talk how great the Titans are all day. We've had multiple Instagram comments asking us to get under the Cowboys, as Jeff did on Facebook as well. So let's move on to the Cowboys, who are 3-0. The next game on Saturday afternoon, it was the Dragons v Cowboys, and the Cows win 46-24. The line was set at -7.5 against the Cowboys, who cover that comfortably. For the Dragons, I think there was definitely a positive period in this game, which is an improvement on last week where they failed to score a point against the Dolphins. The challenge here for the Dragons, for me, becomes how do you extend that little period into an 80-minute performance where you're continually ticking over the clock and challenging and competing for the full 80, whereas for the Cowboys, I actually liked how they won. They were under pressure and they responded. Not every top eight side can respond when they're under pressure. We'll get to another team after this that didn't do it this round. That's a real positive for the Cowboys, particularly because they're a side who we expect to do well and we expect to play finals this year. It's an attribute you really want to have. You know, e.g., look at the Storm last week against the Warriors. They're one of the best sides that, you know, you never feel comfortable against, because if you leave the door open, as you say, they can come right through it. Dragons did that for the Cowboys, and they put a truck through the house, if you will. So positives from both sides, but the Cowboys just simply a class above the Dragons at this stage of the season. Did you see it that way as well?
You know what? The Dragons, I really felt like we're going to win this game. It was more than just a positive period. Like, the game flipped on its head. If you didn't watch it, again, it's going to sound weird to you that I would pinpoint a moment or two when the final margin is 22 points. But after the Cowboys scored the opening try, the Dragons had the next three tries. It was 18 points to 4. And Ben Hunt puts a perfect kick into the end goal that sits up like room service for Raymond Fatala-Mariner, the easiest catch and put down you can ask for in any level of rugby league, even park footy. And it's 24 to 4, if he could have put it down. Spills it cold. The Cowboys, of course, get a 7-tackle set, go down the other end and score. So it's a 12-point turnaround. There was another moment in the second half where, well, in fact, I should say, the Cowboys then go on, harness that momentum to actually hit the front by half time. The Cowboys were leading 20 to 18, which still should suggest, oh, actually, it might have been 22. Yeah, 22-18 at halftime, which still should suggest it's anybody's game. And in fact, the Dragons had the chance to score first after halftime, made a break. Just, I can't remember who it was. It might have been Kyle Flanagan. He didn't look inside. Had he looked inside him, he would have had Sloan running under the sticks, but went for a kick to the outside. And in fact, that went dead and gave the Cowboys a 7-tackle set, which the Cowboys scored off. So I feel like a couple of different moments, there were dead set 12-point swings. But honestly, the momentum that the Dragons had they been up 24-6, like, I would have been very confident they would have won. The chance they could lose that game from that point by more than 20 points is crazy. So I guess you saw a bit more of what the Dragons are capable of first half, but then it was all Cowboys from that moment where RFM just dropped his lollies cold. And what you have to say about the Cowboys is they didn't panic, and geez, they can really turn it on. And they are an excitement machine with the footy. And we saw them strut their stuff against the Finns in round one at Suncorp and scored like 43 points in that game. And then we saw them do everything possibly wrong that they could against the Knights in round two, but still win, which is the mark of a good side. And here we saw them come back from 14 points down on the road, energized home team, energized crowd, doesn't matter, ran in try after try after try. So it is the mark of a good team. There's a reason I did have them top four. They are currently top of the ladder, right? They're the only team, you said, the only team that's won a perfect three from three. And, you know, I actually think that the identity of the Cowboys a couple of years ago was more the defense. And I remember that just wouldn't let anyone score against them in the second half. They were so fit and fierce. But as Drinkwater has developed and did, and, you know, these playmakers have come into their own, and they've got exciting edge back rowers too. Like, Lukey didn't even play in this game, but Fini Fuiaki scored a try, getting his first chance to start. Like, they've got so many weapons, and they're not afraid to throw the footy around. So they're going to be hard to contain this year for sure.
And we have a very happy Cowboys fan on the Instagram chat, Bailey Summers, who is reminding every other fan that his team is 3-0. And as Siebes pointed out from Facebook there, that Dragons just don't have the depth. Well, Jaden Sua being ruled out earlier in the game didn't help them at all one.
They were missing a few. Frank Molo was
suspended.
Sua was ruled out. There's two other forwards. I think Little, he didn't play?
No, he didn't
play. And
there's
another forward that was HIA, because I think they're going to have at least four of their starters back next week. Someone else will tell us in the comments. That's something at least. But it's not the mark of a good team when, you know, you make one mistake and you can't defend it and all the heads drop. And that was the most alarming thing about the Dragons, that you can go from leading the game by 14 points. You think you're about to be up 20, and then next thing you know, you're conceding the next kind of five or six straight tries.
Yeah, and Steve's pointed out it's
RSLA.
Missing. Absolutely correct.
He hasn't played for him this year, but he's meant to be up right by round four. So there's some reinforcements on the way at least.
Yeah, and there were some positives with some negatives in there for Dragons fans. So they can take something from that game and hopefully build on it. Final game of Saturday night. Now, when I said before, Winnie, the mark of a good side like the Cowboys is where they can face adversity and respond. Well, this side failed to. It was Tigers v Sharks, and West Tigers ran out 32-6 winners. The line was set at -11.5 against the Sharks here, which means they missed by 37.5 points in terms of covering it. Now, I was utterly shocked with this result. I fully expected the Tigers to stink it up for another week based on what I saw against the Raiders. I briefly touched on it last week. The same errors that have plagued them the last few years in the back-to-back wooden spoons were still present in round one. But this is what I think. Like, the Warriors as well, they didn't look their best this week. So I'm wondering, did the Raiders last week drag the Tigers into their style as well? And that's why the Tigers look so poor, because this week they didn't. They played their own brand of footy. They didn't fall into the Raiders trap and play Raiders footy. They played Tigers footy. And the Sharks had no answer for it. Fair enough, the Tigers did get some reinforcements back, mainly in Justin Olam, who was awesome. But they just rattled the Sharks, and they were uncharacteristic as a side throughout. Most notably from Nicho Hynes, the man who has the most Dally M points in the past three seasons, kicking out on the full twice from the kick pressure there. It's those little one percenters that if Benji Marsh can get them really working on, they will continue to improve as a side. For the Sharks, fair enough. Plenty went wrong, right? Like, they just didn't respond at all. Like, Finucane had to go for the HIA. Rudolph got injured in the second half. And Royce Hunt hurts his calf warming up, so you can't even replace him because he's part of the 17 now. So plenty went wrong, but they just failed to respond, Winnie. Why is that concerning for something when it's round three? Well, it's the fact they haven't won a finals game under Craig Fitzgibbon because they don't respond well, just like the Rabbitohs don't. When things go against them and the adversity builds up, like the Sharkies did in round one. Maybe I'm being too critical. They did respond against the Warriors, but to not respond against the Tigers, it is only round three. It's a long season. But if you don't get it right, Winnie, when you're versing the Storm at Amy Park in week one of the finals or week two and the Storm are turning up the pressure, you're not going to turn it around if you can't turn it around against the Tigers. So the Sharks need to work on that. Ultimately, I still think they're a side that could play finals. But games like this where they should be winning by a significant margin is going to come around and bite them potentially bite them at the end of the year. But for the Tigers, I've just got to take my hats off. An epic turnaround based on what we saw last week and coach Benji Marshall's first ever win as the main man. So really happy for him in this club in the Tigers. Did you see it a similar way?
Yeah, I want to go over a few of your points. Haven't won a finals game under Fitzgibbon. He's only been in charge, 3 years? Now, can anybody tell me, have they won a finals game since the 2016 grand final?
No, because John Morris made finals both years but didn't win a game.
They haven't. So that's going back. It's even before Fitzgibbon. It's the inability to win the important games. This is different, actually, because the MO of the Sharks has been can't beat top eight sides. Now, Tigers fans out there will be saying that's still the case. And what this means is that the Tigers are a top eight side. And certainly the way they played yesterday, and Benji said as much, that's our, we've set that standard now. That's how we can play. Unfortunately, it just doesn't work like that. What it comes back to is that there are ebbs and flows for every team. That's why I was happy to take the Tigers at Leichhardt, catching 12.5 for the best bet, just because, yes, the Tigers were really bad in round two. That doesn't mean that that game sums up like what they're capable of, and that's what they're going to be every week. And, yeah, the Sharks were pretty impressive in tough, gritty wins over New Zealand and outlasting the Dogs in round two, sure. And 2-0, and you come to a game where you're a $1.25 favorite, you think you're 3-0, but sometimes those are the games you can overlook. You mentioned Hynes kicked it out on the full twice. Just to re-emphasize that, it was like twice in a row, or if not exactly in a row, it was dead set twice in the span of like 2 minutes when it was still anybody's game. It wasn't like late and they were done and he was trying something. This was when they were trying to be in the arm wrestle, Cronulla. Why did they get better as well? I do really believe that Leichhardt, like, it's beautiful scenes. Like that suburban ground, the hill, packed out Saturday night. Like, I love seeing that. I always would prefer even if it's a small crowd, just play it at a smaller suburban ground. I did think that that gave the Cowboys a lift. Sorry, not the Cowboys, the Tigers a lift. I said Cowboys by accident because it did remind me a bit of that night out they did have last year, and good nights were few and far between. But remember, that was the scene of the 54-4 or whatever, roughly win over the Cowboys. And I had that, it had that kind of vibes as like, you know, really a really positive season highlight for the Tigers. And I hate to say it because it's only round three, but it probably will be one of their season highlights. But Caesar in the halves, his kicking was on point. You know, Olam out there being super physical. Abby Coruscant just completely dominated this game. Crazily enough, they said afterwards that he'd had terrible stomach cramps or stomach bug or something and could barely run. He's out there. You know, I think the play that sums up the whole match is his ability to dive on a loose ball with 90 seconds left in the half. And the Tigers were only winning 12-6, but they would have been happy to go into the break 12-6. What they didn't want was to let Cronulla back in. They would have been happy at 12-6, but Appy dives on a ball, gets it back, then gets into dummy half like the next play, then goes for a scoot, ultimately sets up Olam, and suddenly they're up 18-6, and they're going in to basically a standing ovation, and it just gave them so much positivity and momentum, which the Tigers then carried through because you couldn't expect that the Sharks would be done with. You knew the Sharks would throw a bit at the Tigers, but it was the Tigers all night. I really loved the output of that forward pack. They were stronger, they were tougher, and they were faster. You know, and a lot went wrong for Cronulla, but when the scoreline's that emphatic, you can't even put it down to several pieces of bad luck. I mean, you said Royce Hunt injured in the warm-up. And to be clear, that's the bench, that's the sideline warm-up because he was on the interchange bench. So he couldn't even be replaced as opposed to if it was pre-game. So, yeah, a lot went wrong for Cronulla, but it goes to show, you know, this competition, teams aren't always as far away from each other as people think. So look, I didn't see that coming, but Zach says Appy player of the round. He was absolutely phenomenal, led the way, captain's knock. And, you know, I do love to see upsets, and especially when I've got a best bet on a team, I'm very happy about that.
NRL Roasters joined on Instagram, and I saw on his podcast, he did tip the Tigers outright. So that was a great pick there. And who else was it? Digby Ledden says, I've got no ball knowledge. So sad face there, Digby. Hurt my feelings. Sunday afternoon, it was Eels v Manly, and the Eels got up 28-24. This was a pick'em game coming into it as far as the line was concerned, and it really did play out that way. Really, up until Manly's final set, we weren't sure who was going to walk away with the chocolates. It was a true arm wrestle where both sides went back and forth, and a super entertaining game for the viewers. I think this would probably go down as game of the round. My player or player from this game was Junior Paolo, coming from that bench, and he just injected a ton of momentum and energy into an Eels side that was down at that stage, and Manly were really getting on top of. They do face a tough dilemma, though, Winnie, in the future. Do you start JP from the bench and potentially allow sides to get on this roll on and he's forced to come on and shift that momentum? Or do you start him to stop that momentum from ever starting and then potentially lose it later in the game? That's how important the Eels co-captain is to their side. I thought Manly were really unlucky with the Tolatau Kola, the no try that was brought back from a Tom Trbojevic inside ball. Look, by the letter of the law, yes, that was an obstruction by Jake Trbojevic who did stop in the line. But if we're being absolutely honest, we are rewarding Luca Moretti there by being lazy because he did start to walk and slack off, not expecting that inside ball. And instead of trying to compete for the tackle, it was too easy to grab Jake Trbojevic and go, ah. Oh. Whereas if we use common sense in that situation, a tired middle forward who's walking is not going to catch a full sprint Tom Trbojevic on an inside ball. Really unlucky there.
Can I just interrupt? So a couple of things, like you mentioned Paolo. Barlow, how we pronounce it, it's really hard for me to get it right in my mind. Like, I also just said to myself, like, he is such a tank. Like, he is dead set built like a fridge. And he's just got such a great motor. And boy, like, it worked playing him off the bench. So I just had to say, like, I just look at him and just marvel and almost laugh. Like, how do you stop him, right? As for the try, okay, for one thing, the disallowed Manly try, because people have thrown that at me, like, oh, you only won your Winnie's Kitchen and Best Bed and stuff because of that play. Okay, for one thing, Manly were down 8 at the time. So I don't think you can say, oh, give them the 6 points there and then that means they still would have scored the next try. You know, it's a little bit different. But I have another really important point I want to make right now. And I need someone else to go back and check this. I am certain Collis spilled the put down. Like, nobody noticed because he was all on his own. When he slid, I'm telling you, somebody else, go back and check this replay. He has spilled that. And then I see a replay of it. Like, he's dead set, drop that. Yep. I'm like, I don't reckon they're even going to notice. And then the ref says, oh, the bunker wants to have a look at it. And I go, oh, man, that is going to break Manly's hearts. He has dropped that put down. And it ends up being an obstruction, Jake Dvojevic on Moretti. So we never even get to find out. But I just wonder, am I crazy? I know people are treating me like I'm taking crazy pills because that Titans call. It's like, I've said a few other things so far this season that have turned out all right. But I don't know. Am I crazy about that moment? Because it would have almost been worse for Manly. Actually, it worked out even better for the Eels because it turned into a penalty on halfway. But it would have almost been more heartbreaking if it was a legit try spoiled by the put down. I wonder if anybody else saw that other than me. Sorry to interrupt you. I know you've got a few more points on this game.
No, absolutely. Whenever, mate, if the conversation rolls like that. So I didn't actually catch that moment, but I was more focused on the obstruction.
We had no one around him, so I'm sure a lot of people like didn't even question the put down, but I tell you.
Mm.
I'll go back and find the replay myself if no one else does.
And you do make a great point, mate, where, like, you know, even if they score and convert that, they're still down. Like, there's this real mentality with footy fans where instead of saying, Eels were the better side today, but we were close as Manly fans and we've got positives to take from. It's just, oh, the refs robbed us. That should have been a try. That's the reason we lost. And it's so strange because, you know, that's one call, but I wouldn't hazard to say Manly had at least 10-plus errors today and 20-plus missed tackles, right? The Eels were still really good. Where they were the best, though, was their offload. 16-5 in this one. And I thought that was the difference, if I'm absolutely honest. The Eels are really good with their second phase play. And I thought it did zap Manly a little bit of energy in attack. And, you know, it just adds that extra layer to where the defense isn't fully set, ready to come up because there's that late offload. Someone's got to come forward and tackle again. What does that do? It gives Dylan Brown and Mitchell Moses time to run, time to set up their plays, and that's what makes them so dangerous as halves. It's an area of the Eels game where if they can really build on it and get it right, it'll be a nice little bit of X factor come finals where I expect they will be this year. How did you see this one, though? Round out your thoughts on the game, please.
There's so many angles. I mean, even in the comments, we're saying, look, people just want to blame the ref. And Undertaker, who is a diehard Manly fan, he's in the comments blaming the ref. And so hang on. Did DCE not knock on just before halftime? Because Manly scored right on the stroke at halftime after DCE put that kick on in. And then I thought he knocked on. So did the commentators. So did the panel in the studio. But look, it goes both ways. I do think it was a bit of a harsh obstruction call that denied Manly. But again, it's one moment when you're down eight. Like, I'm not going to say just because the team should have scored here or there. The game could turn out very different. But you can't really play that game of, like, let's add 6 points to the score and then say that's what it would have been. Manly was up 14-0. So just to clarify, best bet was Parramatta straight up. Mixed matchup needed Parramatta to put on points. And Winnie's Kitchen was Talangi to score in the first hour. Both teams 14 or more. And Parra to win. So it was not a good start in terms of the bets, but Parra finally responded. My takeaway for Parra, offloading was the difference in the game. You talked about second phase play. Like, they were just able to burn Manly out in the end and generate offense through the back of offloading, but still completing at a high rate, like pretty smart offloading, like kind of winning the collision and getting the ball out the back for the most part. You know, a couple went to ground. But I just thought Manly couldn't handle the amount of offloads. And it's funny because in beautiful, perfect conditions for footy, Manly wasn't willing to do the same. Like, they're a team that likes to spread it from side to side a little bit. But the offload is such a great weapon. And I love when teams are willing to let it rip. And Manly, the Eels reap the benefits of that in a high-scoring game. Yes, they had to hang on late, you know, slightly curious, taking a shot at goal when they're up 8, extend it to 10. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't do you any good if you let in a try at the end. But this is one where I'm not even going to come out of it and say, like, oh, it proves I was right. Like, for sure, best bet was Eels. They won by 4 points. It's a tight game. These are the ones that can go either way. So I'm happy to win a close one because I just thought it was really entertaining. There was some great quality intensity in the tackling, and the commentary that I was listening to was talking about, you know, that's really resembling finals intensity. So I just thought it was awesome, and it was extra exciting when we had the Talangi try on the board And so we just knew that Parra had to hang on and win that game. And of course, I'm nervous when Manly did cut it to 4 points late, but I'm glad to be on the right side of a narrow victory there.
Spot on, mate. 3 from 3 there as far as the best bet mix matchup and Wendy's Kitchen was concerned, which is awesome. And overall, just an exciting game of rugby league. So everyone was a winner in that one. Well, I'm sure Manly fans won't feel that way, but everyone but Manly fans were winners in that one. Final game of the round. We just saw it. It was on Sunday night. It was the Knights v Storm, and the Knights get up 14-12. This was a pick'em game as well coming into it. And again, it really did finish that way where the Storm were a genuine chance. It was a very, very tight contest. I thought the Knights were strong and good without being great throughout this game. They had a few bad errors or decisions from both halves, but the class of Kalen Ponga was ultimately what got them over the line in my mind today. The Storm were very clunky at times, and you can expect that when both of your first choice halves are missing. Despite this, though, there was still effort from that team throughout. You know, with Tyrone Richard getting that late try, they were still pressuring the Knights and still trying their best. The Storm's completion rate was slightly lower than what they usually complete at today. And it was a Knights side that's 0-2 and desperate to win in front of their home fans on a beautiful Sunday night. I really think that those two factors there were the main ones here. And that's why the Knights just scraped ahead. And that was the only thing that separated these sides tonight. Did you see it in a similar way?
First, I just want to say, if people are watching this, I don't know if I'm driving people crazy. I probably shouldn't even draw your attention to it. But I swear I'm blinking so much. I think I've got sore eyes from watching so much footy this weekend. Probably square eyes from sitting in front of the screen, staring so intently because we had 6 best bets on the line. And again, we won a close one. Like, I definitely feel we deserve to win this. Had the Knights to win straight up and also to secure the mixed matchup needed Melbourne to be kept under 28. And that was never in question. But I mean, it was 14-0 at half time. And in the first half, just thought, yeah, the Knights are the superior side. They're at home and they're 0-2. They're desperate. Melbourne's lucky to be 2-0, but with no Munster, no Hughes, like, how are you going to come up with enough opportunities and enough points? You know, it's kind of like all on, well, Grant can create things and Papenhuyzen off the back of it. But when you got less focal points, it's easier for the defence to kind of key in on those main men. So, I mean, a moment of the first half, that ball from Ponga on down a short side, like that, it's like a triple cutout, like just a thing of beauty. Like Ponga, the way he moves is just so beautiful to watch, but he can do things like he can pass the ball on a string as if he's jogging, you know, because he's so in control. So you got a class player like that. That's the difference. And at 14-0 halftime, I just thought there's no way that the Knights will let this slip because they need this win so badly. You saw how nervous AOB was in the box because it's the same situation as the Warriors. He had a great year last year, but you throw it all away if you start the next year 0-3 because you just set yourself such a mountain to climb. And it's such a winnable game. And like the Warriors, you're playing Melbourne and you're up a couple of scores. And all you got to do is be able to complete sets and defend and you will win the game. But just like that Warriors game, there is a try late in the piece. The Knights couldn't take any more chances and extend the lead. So the Storm cut it from an 8-point deficit to a 2-point deficit like they did against the Warriors. And also like they did against the Warriors, they got a shot at goal for a 2-point field goal. And I swear the Knights forgot about the rule because they were just thinking, oh, where's the shot coming from? Melbourne's going to go a long-range shot. Melbourne's going to go a shift here. And they were just kind of happy. 10 metres per tackle, 10 metres per tackle in that final set. And Storm rolled up to halfway. And Storm just went one off the ruck. Papenhuyzen, with nobody even attempting to charge down, he had a chance from 45 out. And I've seen him kick it before. He did it at Suncorp against the Roosters. That could have been golden point. Like, that was a bit casual by the Knights. It didn't quite get the distance and it went to the side and the Knights clung on. But far from impressive. It doesn't matter because all they had to do today was win. They did just manage to do that, but only just. But you'd be nervous because the Knights at their best against an undermanned Storm. Don't forget Nelson. Big Nelson is still out as well. The Knights should have been winning this far more comfortably than what it came down to.
Yeah, and I think if you are a Knights fan, ultimately you're happy to record the first win for the year, but you are looking at the second half of the game against the Cowboys and now Storm and seeing a theme where you are fading out of the contest. And as you touched on, when they were at their best and they won 10 in a row, they weren't fading out of contest at all. They were, you know, putting teams to the sword at times there as well. So
absolutely. Something and some other comments about it being scrappy and Storm. Like, Storm like fought hard. Like you give them credit for being undermanned and in a hostile environment, fighting to the end. But you don't give them credit for execution, because when you are undermanned, you've got to have your I's dotted, your T's crossed. They made a lot of mistakes, Melbourne. Like they dropped the, like Bellamy was tearing his hair out nearly as much as AOB. So the Knights, that's even more so the reason why the Knights should have won this comfortably, is Melbourne hurt themselves on plenty of occasions as well, had no right to be within a two-point field goal shot at the end.
No, absolutely not. But overall, a great round of footy. We finish up with our best bets at 9-4. We cash a mixed matchup, a winner's kitchen, and we fall short with the better same game multi again. But we had a lot of success with that one last year, so hopefully one is around the corner there. A quick note for all of our viewers that are still with us or listening later as a podcast. I'll be missing over the next fortnight or so with the preview shows and recaps. I will be traveling to Las Vegas for the Tim Zoo fight. So I'll miss next week's recap. And then I might miss the next preview show as well, just with the changing of time zones flying out of Las Vegas. I'm not too sure, but I'll still try to be involved with the show and send some clips across with what I'm thinking and everything like that. So our man Winnie will do it solo or potentially have a few celebrity guest appearances. So stay tuned for that. If you could have one guest on the show, Winnie, who is it going to be and why? Anyone.
Is Tino free? Too soon, mate.
Hey,
end the show right there. Get away from league. I don't even expect you to send any clips or anything. Get away from it all. Go over to Las Vegas and forget all about the NRL. It could be a good time for you. That could be a positive. So we hope you have a fantastic and safe trip, mate. And barbecuing alone, nothing I'm not used to. So we've got a strong little foundation 3 weeks into the 3.5 kind of weeks into the season. And I hope that I can carry it on and make it a really strong first month to season 10 of the Tripod. We'll be back very soon, guys. Hey, it's like 48 hours. Under 48 hours, we're back again with our live preview for round 4, or it will be me on my own. So see you all then. Have a good start to your week. Thanks for tuning in. And Lego.